the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, we are now starting to see an increase in COVID cases around the country, from hospitalization to deaths. But we're also hopeful. We're hearing more news about vaccines coming out here shortly. What will it look like when the economy finally opens up? And what are the risks that you have as an employer? That's the topic of today's discussion. Joining me on the program is Annie Ellis. She's a COVID-19 compliance expert. And Annie, let's talk about what business face as we get into lockdown, but also eventually when we open up, because we were talking on the air, San Diego County just went into a curfew mode from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. So what can you tell us?
Hi, Jim. This has been a really stressful couple of weeks for businesses here in California. You know, we have a color coding system, and as you probably saw, 9 or 10 states were at the highest color code, which is purple, about a week or two ago. And then all of a sudden earlier this week, 41 of the 58 moved back to purple. And so what that means is we're clawing back on who's coming to the workplace, who's allowed to be open. And, you know, if you're a business that has to reopen, there's a massive amount of regulations that you have to comply with. And you have to stay on top of not only what you have to comply with, but also the changes. I call it the big three: federal, state, and local. And they change. The state for state and local here in San Diego and California, they've changed 4 or 5 times this week already, and it's only Thursday. So it's very devastating for employers.
Does government realize how much more difficult they're making things for employers? I mean, if you have a rule on Monday that gets changed on Tuesday and gets revamped on Wednesday, how do you comply with that?
Well, it's interesting. I was looking at some of the county stuff that came out Tuesday night, which is restrictions on the face covering, sort of new interpretations, saying that employees in cubicles have to wear it when they're at their desk. And I was talking to a client, and she goes, "So when is this going to affect?" And I was like, "Yesterday." So, you know, you're already out of compliance. So let's get this moving. But I just think it's one of those things where my mom used to say, "You cut off your nose to spite your face." I mean, we've got to get people working. We've got to get businesses working again. And I get there's a balance, but there has to be a better way to do this. And he's obviously on the vilification sort of platform right now after the whole French Laundry incident. So I'm not sure where his credibility is.
Yeah, I mean, you have that, and you've seen that with a lot of the governors and mayors. Do as I say, not as I do. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal, Annie, about companies tiptoeing back to the office and are encountering a legal minefield. So I wonder if we might get into some of the things that employer should be very cognizant of if you're going to reopen, or you're in a situation where you have a business where you have to have people on the job.
Yeah, my recommendation for businesses that really do have to reopen are, it's three steps. One, you got to get on your update list, your live update list for your big three, your federal, state, and local, and be working with an expert on that. So if you're not getting live emails from the CDC when they change something, or live emails from your state Department of Health or county, as things are changing, then you're not going to be in the know. And that's really important. The second thing is you got to put this stuff in writing. And I've been recommending a standalone COVID policy. You know, a lot of these businesses have these great, robust employee handbooks. They're 50, 60, 100 pages. It's a document they've been developing over years. But you don't want to put your COVID stuff in there necessarily, because in a month or two or 12 months, this is all going to change. And the third thing I recommend is keep it as flexible as possible. So don't write something that's overly detailed, because then you're going to have to turn around in 7 to 10 days and change it. So hit the highlights, you know, the health screenings, the social distancing, the PPE, the workers' comp issues, and the medical leave. Those are the big ones that I recommend addressing, and leave everything else for just dealing with it as it comes up.
You know, the thing that really strikes me is, since this began in February, and we're addressing this very issue right now, is how often the medical profession has changed their mind. I mean, you remember, Annie, when this thing first started, we were told you don't wear masks, you just wear gloves. And so when you went into Costco, everybody had hand gloves on. And so I remember ordering boxes of gloves. And then all of a sudden, no, you have to wear masks. Now masks are mandatory. Lockdowns are good. No, lockdowns are not good. Even the WHO has changed their views on lockdown. So it seems like they're experimenting with this as we go along. And sometimes you have to question whether it's science.
Not only do I question whether it's science, but I think there's sort of a cost-benefit analysis of when you make a change, have you thought through the trickle-down effect of how many industries, businesses, and workers this is going to affect? Because, you know, let's say we all survive this health and safety, you know, at the end of this pandemic, but are we going to have jobs and are we going to be able to support ourselves? Or are we running businesses into the ground so much every time we have a new theory that it's just not practical? And that's been one of my biggest concerns, is that a lot of these are very short-sighted, particularly in our state of California, where the business restrictions are just enormous.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at, I was a couple Saturdays ago when it was raining, and I was going to pick up takeout, and here were two restaurants with tents, with gas heaters, and the people were eating outside when it's raining, and they didn't look really happy. I mean, you know, it's cold, it's raining, and you're eating outside. I imagine that's not really good for business.
My husband and I say this a lot, and we go out to eat a lot. We're foodies. I mean, are we going to go spend $200 to $300 on a dinner to go have that dinner be in the middle of the street with a train or a truck driving by? And the answer to that is no. And I watched this poor sushi place across the street from us. You know, they're operating on like ash right next to the train tracks. And I feel so terrible for them, because this is what they've resorted to. You know, you pay $40 for a sushi roll and you're eating it while the cargo train rolls by. But unfortunately, restaurants are going to be the hardest hit. Particularly with winter coming and no indoor dining.
You know, the other thing too is they did some statistics here locally, and that's not where a lot of the COVID cases were coming from. They were coming mainly from home. So to take an industry, I don't know, nail, hair salon, or a restaurant, and virtually make it almost impossible to run, because I was talking to one of the local restaurant owners, and even though they've resorted to takeout and they're getting by, but, you know, Annie, if you're going to go out and order takeout, you're probably not going to order a bottle or a glass of wine to take out. And that's where a lot of the margin for some of these restaurants come from.
I agree. I mean, we try to promote that as much as possible. But, you know, some of these older school restaurants have had to pivot very quickly to this to-go and food delivery model that they might not have had before. And, it, you know, not all the staff are able to deal with it. The industries that are impacted the most by this, you know, the restaurants, the gyms, the salons, although I think they got an exception, I'm not sure how some of these mom and pop places in particular are going to recover. I'm sure you saw what Fit Athletic is experiencing here in San Diego. I thought it was creative. When we turned purple last week, they self-declared themselves an essential sector because of their promotion of health and safety and their relationship with the insurance industries. And I remember seeing that thinking, that's creative. That's interesting. They got a cease and desist letter so fast from the county. And now they're in the middle of a lawsuit trying to overturn that on behalf of all gyms. So more costs, more lawyers' fees, for what end? We'll see.
Yeah, because at some point, when you destroy so much of your economy, how do you rebuild it? I mean, assuming at some point, maybe next year with the vaccine, that we are going to get back to some kind of normalcy, whatever that's going to look like, what are you going to do when the restaurants are gone, the salons, the gyms, the services? And the thing I worry about is the retailers are having a tough time. I don't care. In fact, we're going to do a special show on this with the number of department stores that are shutting down, closing stores. And we all know about Black Friday, when the Christmas season, where a lot of these retailers actually make their profit for the year. How are they going to get by this year when almost most of everybody I know is shopping online? How do they make it?
Well, Amazon's certainly doing pretty well. I wish I had gotten stock in them earlier this year, but I've been trying to promote local business shopping as much as possible. I'm sure you saw, you probably have as many sales emails as I do. Every time you buy something, you get the email from that company. What I thought was interesting is the Black Friday sale started, 2 weeks early this year? And to me, I saw that as not because they're trying to necessarily benefit the consumer, but because they're so desperate to get these sales in and get it in so early that they're stretching out the Black Friday season, which used to be one day, and then now was Thursday through Monday, Cyber Monday, and now it seems like it's going to be the entire month of November. So, I mean, I agree. I think that retailers are really suffering, and I don't know what 2021 is going to look like. My crystal ball is broken, but I just don't think it's going to look good for a lot of industries.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, if you take a look at how these decisions are being made, and maybe you can speak to this, but, you know, even during the worst lockdown, which began, what was it, in February here in California, I could go to Costco. I could go to Target, I could go to Walmart, but I couldn't go to any of the local stores. So how do you explain that?
Yeah, I remember that the first 60 days or so were incredibly frustrating. And those industries had taken it upon themselves to sue the counties. We didn't have anything here in San Diego, but LA and San Francisco, they did. But does that mean as a small mom and pop business owner, you have to undertake a publicly filed lawsuit and pay an attorney in order to just simply operate, which one might argue that your constitutional right is to operate? It is, people put their life, blood, and all their money and savings into these businesses, and to just have them crushed by what I view as unconstitutional regulations, I think is going to have a devastating impact for years to come.
Oh, absolutely. And even some of the regulations, like in California, you know, the jokes about Thanksgiving, you have to eat your turkey outside, can't have more than two people, you can't laugh, sing, or shout.
No singing.
Oh, God, that is deadly. That really, really, really spreads the virus. I mean, some of these things make absolutely no sense. And we've seen it not just here in California. You had it in Illinois. You could be a family of four at home, but you couldn't be a family of four on a boat. I mean, so you try to follow the logic that these politicians are going with. I guess maybe speaking from a legal point of view, as a business, as you talk about, they've changed the rules almost daily. How do you navigate through that?
Yeah, the one thing I want to point out on the most ridiculous nonsense is the diner guidance that came out here in California, that put your mask on, take it off, take a bite, put it back on, take it off, take a bite. I mean, that was just absolutely ridiculous. But in terms of the legal quagmire that I think businesses are facing, you know, I think if you do the big three I talked about, which is get on your update list for the three types of agencies, have something in writing, and be as flexible as possible. There's something called a good faith attempt to comply. So as long as you have a good faith attempt and you're trying to do right, I think you're going to avoid liability on health and safety compliance and individuals testing positive, meaning I don't see a lot of lawsuits coming out saying you didn't have the right PPE or I tested positive either because I'm a customer or an employee. What I do think is going to happen is we're going to have a litany of litigation. This is already starting over employees getting disgruntled over something related to COVID, whether they complained about the remote work policy, they complained about people not wearing masks, whatever it is. They don't understand why they were furloughed. They didn't get the right paid sick leave. That is going to drive them to talk to a lawyer. And we've already seen massive amounts of litigation in Q4 pop up because of that.
So it's more coming from the employees that aren't happy with work conditions?
Right. And this is the age-old adage that I've always said, you know, employees don't wake up and say, I want to sue my employer because of Labor Code Section 6200. That they're emotional. They're human beings just like the rest of us. And they get their feelings hurt. They get upset. They go talk to a lawyer and the lawyer finds the best type of lawsuit. And testing positive in the workplace is not the best type of lawsuit. For one, in most states, it's probably going to be covered by workers' comp insurance. So it's not a great lawsuit. Two, how are you going to prove that? So they're going to go for the big ticket items, which are the medical leaves, the wage and hour issues. Are you reimbursing for the home office? Are you paying for the daily health screenings that employees have to go through? Those types of things that I think will lead itself to bigger ticket claims that employers probably aren't thinking about right now.
So if we were to take a look at, as you mentioned, if you want to stay clean as much as you can and out of the court system, you take a look at your federal, state, local regulations, update that, and anything you put it in writing so everybody knows about it, but be flexible because these things change almost every week.
Yes, they do. And it is your duty to stay on top of everything. So make sure you have a good expert. And I'm not saying you have to drive up legal fees or, you know, rely solely on your HR manager to do all of this, but you got to have someone that's telling you what to do. And you've got to make sure that you have a constant flow of information, because if you're an employer that, for example, just happened to miss last week and this week, those were big weeks. There were lots of changes, and that could be devastating for the way you operate, particularly if you're a non-essential business and all of a sudden now you can't be operating the way you could 10 days ago.
So with the courts getting backed up with all these cases, and I'm sure it's only going to get bigger, have they thought of coming out with something at the federal level? I know the Republicans were trying to work on something in the bill for legal liabilities, and that didn't go through. but something at the national level. So because every state is so different, the policies, I mean, you just watch the evening news and watch what different states are doing. It's crazy.
It is crazy. Over the summer, when there were competing offers from the Democrats and the Republicans at the federal level for, like, for example, the extension of unemployment insurance and those things, they each had a proposal on the liability waiver, the liability shield for employers. Neither one of it's passed, and obviously politics have been a little busy with other things since then. So I haven't seen any new discussions, but my perspective is this. I think we should pass it. I don't think it will pass now, especially with the new congressional makeup. But I also don't know how much it's going to impact California employers, because that liability waiver would really only apply to the things that I don't think they're going to get sued over, which is I got COVID from the workplace, or maybe we didn't have all of the right regulations in place. Those are low ticket items, and it's not going to give them a shield from the wage and hour and the medical leave and the retaliation things that I think are the more costly lawsuits.
So if you were to put a list of most likely troubled aspects of your business, why don't we go through some of those and list them?
The ones that I'm focusing on right now is wage and hour, as well as medical leave, as well as complaint reporting. So let me go through each one. Wage and hour, reimbursements. We've got loads of employees working from home right now. And in California, there's a statutory duty to provide expense reimbursement. So are you giving them money for their cell phone? Are you giving them money for their home internet, for their home setup? You don't have to do a dollar for dollar reimbursement, but you have to have something reasonable. And that's getting overlooked a lot by businesses. And expense reimbursement claims are expensive, and they come with mandatory attorney's fees. We also have the timekeeping issue, which is, are we accurately recording our hourly employees' time worked? How do we know? Because they're not in front of us. Are they getting their breaks? So I've been recommending pretty updated and rigid timekeeping policies to make sure that we're on notice that they're providing, they're submitting all their hours worked. I'm calendaring and planning on, you know, in the calendar itself, these breaks, and we're not authorizing them to work on anything other than their laptop, for example, email on their phone. That's going to create a wage issue. On the complaint reporting procedure, make sure that there is a way for employees to actually say, hey, this isn't working. Right now, employees are separated. They're not seeing each other day to day. So for them to actually use their voice and say, this isn't working, we have an issue, is more scary for them, because they have, you know, online chat, email. It's just a lot more serious when they have to report it. So make that casual and comfortable. And then the medical leave. When you have an employee use the C word, COVID, and they say that that's the reason why they need time off, you've got to make sure that you're navigating their paid leave benefits, which are now mandated by federal law, and giving them the time off, as well as making sure there's no retaliation for doing that.
Now, we've had one of our employees get COVID. We didn't even know about it. So because everybody's working remotely, you don't see these people. You talk to them on the phone, so you don't know. Basically, that's got to be done through communication at the higher ups down to the everybody else.
Yeah, that's a good one. So if you do have on-site employees, then if you have someone that tests positive and was at the work site within 14 days, there is a whole mechanism that employers have to follow now with shutdown and cleaning the work site, notifying impacted employees, notifying Cal OSHA, notifying the workers' comp carrier. So California, as of January 1st, some of these are already in effect, have all these rigid requirements if you have anyone that was actually in the workplace and testing positive. I think that could be an issue for legal claims, not complying with the reporting and the cleaning procedures, but time will tell.
So we were summing this up. Wage and hour, expense reimbursement for things that are being incurred at home as a result of working from home, as you mentioned, cell phone. Complaints for employees. So if something is troubling, not working out well, allowing some kind of channel of communication where they can express that. And then medical leave. Somebody gets sick, they have a... And does that apply too with related family members, like somebody saying, hey, my brother's got COVID or my mother's got COVID? Does that apply for sick leave too?
It might. So in order to get the actual paid benefit, you have to show that you're the person caring for that individual, which could be like an elderly parent or a minor child. But there's, in addition to the paid benefit, there's actual unpaid protected time off for most family members here in California that give you continuation of insurance benefits and unfettered right to reinstatement. So there's a whole bunch of leave laws that you have to navigate as an employer when it comes to these issues.
And so if you do get into these kind of issues, and as you mentioned, the three that you want to keep up with, federal, state, and local mandates. Now, like I said, right in this, just before the interview, we just got an alert that we're into curfew now. So those are kind of things that you have to keep yourself apprised of. Is there a particular site that employers can go to, let's say at the federal level, that you can find out that you're in compliance?
I wish there was a uniform, consolidated place to say, you know, I can just have a one-stop shop. But if I had to narrow it down to the biggest ones, I would say at the federal level, the CDC and the EEOC. And it's pretty easy to sign up for their alerts. You just go onto their website and say, I want to get the news alerts or updates. Each state has a Department of Public Health. So here in California, we've got our own. That's the state one that I would sign up for. And then your county. I actually think the county is the most important because it hits closest to home. It's probably going to have the most impactful and updated information, and it often incorporates the state and the federal. So if you're already, you know, overwhelmed by having to go to three different places, just do the county one, because I think you'll get everything you need from there. Here in San Diego, you can do it by text, email, or whatever. And we get live updates for everything that they send out.
Annie, do you ever see anything where there's a conflict between what the federal government wants you to do, the state government, and the county?
Only on days that end in Y, Jim. In that case, you get the lovely choice of choosing the one that's more protective of the employee. You don't get the benefit of choosing the one that's better for you as the business owner.
Yeah, because it just strikes me when you're talking about complying with federal, state, and local, those three could be different rules.
Yeah, a great example is the travel quarantine. So this week here in California, because of all the holiday guidances, the no singing, the no having fun, they've said that if you travel outside of the state of California for the holidays, there's a mandatory 14-day quarantine when you get back. And that's frustrating because that really conflicts with the CDC guidance where it says it's encouraged or you should. So if you're, I don't know, a server in a restaurant and you decide to fly to Nevada for Thanksgiving because you want to see your family, which isn't outside the realm of possibility, now you can't work for 14 days when you come back. And oh, by the way, that mandatory quarantine is probably going to trigger federal paid sick leave, so your business owner is going to have to pay you for that.
Oh, my goodness. So summing this up, stay in touch with federal, state, and local. Local is probably the best because that's going to tell you more of what you need to operate under. And then the three big ones, wage and hour, expense reimbursement, complaints for employees, and medical leave.
That's it.
As we close, if our listeners would like to follow you or get in touch with you because they may need your services, how could they do so?
AnnieEllisLaw.com.
AnnieEllisLaw.com. Well, Annie, I want to thank you for coming on the program. Stay safe and have a happy holiday.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.